Yama, SBS acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and pays respects to elders past and present and ongoing in stewardship in knowledges since time immemorial. Welcome to Speak My Language Disability. Listen as we share stories of First Nations people who are engaging in their passions while living with a disability. Throughout this series, you'll hear inspiring stories from leaders and advocates within the community who have successfully pursued their dreams in their chosen fields. I'm Nari Pakai, and in this episode, I have a yarn with Skye Cusack. She's a Dulgubara Yirrindji, Indonesian and Chinese writer, journalist and comedian living in Rubibi, Broome. Skye shares stories that make you laugh, cry and call your therapist. Her most recent work, Checked Out, received a 2025 Elevate Grant, 2025 Copyright Agency Varuna Fellowship, and is shortlisted for the 2025 Penguin Write It Fellowship. Skye navigates the world with an invisible disability and joins us to share her journey. Thanks for jumping on and having a yarn with us today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here and to have a yarn with you.
So I gave a little bit of an intro there, but can you introduce yourself? Who are you? Who's your mob? Where are you from?
I am Skye. So my mob, the Dulgubara Yirrindji mob, are in the Atherton Tablelands, specifically my family's in Yungaburra, which is about an hour away from Cairns in far north Queensland. But I'm currently based in Rubibi or Broome on Yarru Dugan country, just working as the marketing coordinator at Mugabala Books.
Can you share with us your journey in understanding your own invisible disability?
Yeah, it was a very long, stressful journey, and I laughed and I cried and I sung and I danced and I did all the things that you do. So I kind of have like a smorgasbord of disabilities, I guess. So I'm someone who lives with physical and mental disabilities. I have dissociative amnesia, and I also have OCD. And I've had both of those things since I was a very young child. The physical disability, which I don't have a diagnosis for, it's just like that's the journey that I'm still on. I'm trying to find out what that looks like, what diagnostic criteria that could relate to. Yeah, I just like sometimes I can't walk. And so tricky to talk about it in a very clean, linear way. Other people will say to me, like, oh, like, what's your disability? And I'll say, sometimes I just can't walk and I don't really know why or what I'm going to do about it. But yeah, so I guess that's kind of a summary. Sorry, I wish I had like a clean answer for you, but I guess that's my lived experience as someone with a disability. Is like, it's a very messy, rambly answer. And that kind of is genuinely how it feels for me.
So you self-advocate in the workplace. In what ways do you champion your voice in what's now been dubbed as constructive complaining?
Yes, I am a very constructive complainer. So I'm kind of lucky now working at Mugabala Books that I don't have to do that. No, I feel like for most of my career working as a marketer, I've always kind of cosplayed as like neurotypical and physically abled. And especially so I used to work in finance. The thing about working in marketing is that you understand the dynamics and the strategies that you use to promote something, normally for monetary or kind of social recognition gain. And so a lot of people apply that to themselves. And so especially when I was younger and I was really trying to just present as like a white leaning mixed race person who was neurotypical and physically abled, it kind of took me, and that was all coming from a place of shame. In terms of self-advocacy, it was really hard. And shame is something that I'm really trying to kind of disassociate from my journey and my feelings around what I'm talking about. Yeah, I guess step number one was being in a place where I could advocate for myself, because it wasn't just in the workplace. It was also to every single doctor I've ever seen, because the unfortunate truth is that for pretty much all of my life, I've also been someone that's lived in a larger body. I like to use the term fat when I talk about my body. So, you know, being someone who's lose fat and also being someone who oftentimes can't walk, there is kind of an associated stigma of like, oh, well, you can't walk because you look like this. And then they kind of assume that maybe I have like these certain lifestyle behaviors or habits. And there's a lot of blame that we get externally, and I internalized a lot of that for a long time. But when I was in predominantly like white neurotypical spaces, particularly like when I worked in finance and tech, a lot of it just kind of was about like there is kind of like that burden of education. And so I did a lot of work with our HR team, and I helped to create policies around being queer in the workplace, disabilities, like a lot of education. And yeah, so then I guess kind of structurally things have to change. Luckily now I work for organizations where you can just kind of have a conversations with leaders to kind of make these changes, and then just kind of being really open. But it is hard because you need energy to do all these things. And with a lot of my experiences with mental and physical disability, like I didn't always have the energy. And so it's just like a lot of self-care, a lot of being quite vulnerable. And then, you know, I did actually make the decision to kind of leave those spaces in the end. Yeah, I like to hopefully think that because a lot of my work was about policy and about like organizational changes, that things did get better for people that came after me. But you just have to have a lot of love for yourself and a lot of love for the people that you're trying to constructively complain to, because if it's not happening in good faith, then you can't have genuine conversations.
You're going through school at the moment. In what ways has education been inaccessible or now accessible for you?
Yeah, education was a big thing for me growing up. It was big for me in the way. So when I was growing up, I actually went to 14 different schools. And so my family moved around a lot. And I also pretty much consistently got bullied at every single school I went to. I think I feel very privileged and very grateful that I have been able to get an education in a country that where, you know, like the rubric and the curriculum kind of matches the way that my brain works. So I always got pretty high grades in school. I think I also didn't kind of realize that I was disabled until I was probably like almost in my 20s. Yeah, I actually didn't finish year 11 or year 12, but I am from Tasmania. And when I was in year 11 and 12, they went compulsory education. And yeah, I had a pretty bad time at school, especially because I have dissociative amnesia. Like it's hard to remember things. That's a fun side effect of amnesia. Things like that were really tricky. And I don't know, I guess I just have the gift of the gab. So I somehow always made it through presentations and exams. And it's sad because I really do love learning. And then I didn't go to university. I kind of had this alternative pathway into marketing and writing where I just worked really, really hard. That's the one thing I've had my whole life is like just this insane, almost inhuman work ethic. And I think that's brought me through anything. And so I didn't go to uni for a really long time, which is kind of in the spaces I'm in, that's quite rare. But then a few years ago, I decided that I did want to go to university. And so I applied to RMIT. For some reason, they accepted me into a master's program, but I'd never been to university before. But I guess I've been working in this industry for like nearly 13 years. And so they kind of had a lot of recognition of prior learning because I've been working in my field for so long. And so they said, you can just start at a master's of marketing. And I was like, I've never been to university in my life. Like, why are you doing this to me? Like, it was the weirdest experience. I did not know what I was doing. Like, I don't know if I can describe to you what it's like to go straight into a master's program and that's your first university experience. I was quite nervous because I was like, I know that I'm going to need support, particularly because, yeah, like, and I was working full time when I was studying. I was working full time at the bank. In addition to all of this, I also have struggled with disordered eating, and I have a diagnosed eating disorder. And so I was like, I went to the doctor and I went to the GP and I was like, look, I can't walk. I also have seizures. Like, I have amnesia. Like, I don't really know how to put this all into a plan when I don't have a clear diagnosis. And so they said, look, you have a diagnosed eating disorder, and that comes with its own set of like fatigue and stress and things like that. So that's what we'll put down on the plan. But then I think you should go to the school and kind of explain more outside of the diagnosis. And so I don't want to say that having disordered eating was like a life hack of mine. That's not kind of the impression that I want to give. But I think I was just very lucky, and I feel very grateful that both the school and my GP were understanding, because there is kind of like this weird thing of if you do have an invisible disability or you're still in the process of getting a diagnosis, but you still need support in the meantime to live your life and achieve your goals. Yeah, I don't know. I just felt so grateful that people were willing to work with me and help support me in the ways that they could while still ticking all the boxes.
You are also in the creative space. You're currently developing a young adult comedy manuscript with Magalbala Books. How has your work in marketing helped you in your storytelling?
I actually just signed the contract for that yesterday. I'm really excited. So I actually got the publishing offer, or I was told that they would like to acquire it for publication before I started working at Magalbala Books. So I think maybe sometimes people think that just because I work here, I got offered that, but I want that on the record. I did get told that they were interested in acquiring my book for publishing before I got the job here. And I worked on that book for a very long time. And the book is about some of these things I've talked about, experiencing fat phobia in the medical industry. It's about, you know, being Black and living with OCD and needing to advocate for yourself with mental and medical health practitioners. And so it is like a YA comedy book, but it does hold a lot of that lived experience, especially in a small town. And it also kind of explores kind of the dangers of what happens when the system fails you, and kind of how do youth interact with each other, and what kind of like toxic, unhealthy surrogate relationships do they form in place of systems that aren't helping them. And when you're beginning advocating for yourself and you have like these life struggles and that you're experiencing stigma and you're in the process of getting a diagnosis, like how do you advocate for yourself in the meantime? And I think that's something that I'm really passionate about, is you still need to live and exist and get support in the meantime while you're on those journeys. And so the writing for me, when I first started writing it, I never thought it would get published. Like, that's insane. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I was writing it because no one had ever written anything that I had read like that. And I think that's what a lot of people in marginalized communities, now that I work at Magalbala Books and I talk with people in the industry and I go to conferences and I meet other authors and creators, that's what I hear a lot. Like, I wanted to write a story that I've never read before, or I wanted to write a story to see myself in there. And I think I didn't really know much about being Black. I didn't really know what that meant. I didn't know how to get published. I didn't even kind of think that was an option. And it was only because I was working as a marketing manager at Black and Bright, which is a First Nations literary festival based in Naam, that I kind of found out about Magalbala Books and that I kind of felt confident to even submit it. Marketing, like I said before, to work in marketing is kind of like a cheat, I guess, because you learn all about how to promote something. And so I think I've just become very good at thinking of myself as a product, which also comes with like a whole other like moral quandary of like, do I want to think of myself as a product?
You're also a comedian. How are you funny?
Allegedly, I'm a comedian. I'm actually doing a comedy show this weekend. I don't know. So this whole comedian thing was truly an accident. Like, I don't think that I meant for it to be funny. So actually the whole comedian thing came out of publishing this book with Magalbala. When I kind of first wrote the manuscript that was sent to be submitted, it was quite serious because I'm tackling these things like weight stigma and disability and mental health and things like that. And then, you know, they read it and they were like, you are funny, and you can put comedy into this book. I had an old boyfriend, as we always do, who had told me like our whole relationship, like, Sky, you're not funny, you're just pretty. And then that in itself was funny, because if you look at people like me, I don't look like the type of person that would just be pretty in a relationship. Like, you know, when you look like me and you have the body shape and the hair texture of someone like me, like, they're not people who are like used for their bodies or like used just to be pretty. And so even that in itself was funny. And then, yeah, Magalbala was kind of like, we know you're funny and we think you can bring more of that into the manuscript and kind of play with, I guess I have like a very like cheeky sense of humor, and I do like to find the absurdity in things. So especially like, you might be like, how is advocating for yourself to a doctor about weight stigma funny? But I like to think that I found a way to do that in the book. And then I guess from there, I just have had kind of like a crazy life. And so when I do comedy, I'm kind of just like telling yarns, but like, maybe I'm not funny. And I think I have a very subjective type of humor that just comes from being like a black fella that's just had like a hectic life. And the lore of Sky Cusack, I guess, is just like a little bit wild. So if you say, how am I funny? I say, I don't really know. And it's all kind of just happened accidentally.
When it comes to sharing stories, you're doing this through a manuscript, through a YA book. What advice would you give other people who want to share their stories?
My work isn't particularly like cultural, so I'm not telling like my mob's like cultural stories and lore and things like that. But even so, I think the first thing to do, especially, you know, like if you're a black writer, is I always talk to my elders and especially to my grandfather, and just to make sure that what I'm doing is like, is something, I think, just sense checking. So yeah, getting cultural permission from elders is a big one for me, which maybe people wouldn't think about if they were writing stories like mine, because I'm not writing, yeah, like strong like cultural stories. But I still think it's important, and just kind of, yeah, sense checking from communities as well. Understanding that even though you're telling your own story, you don't represent a community. So like having the understanding of like different representations, and so telling other people what you're writing and asking questions, sense checking is really important, because your lived experience is like not representative. And sometimes I guess like I write fiction, but like, do I really write fiction? Because you can hear from what I'm saying that obviously it's very strongly based on things that I've been through. You have to be responsible with what you're saying, and very purposeful, and just kind of coming from a place of respect. That's kind of the biggest thing that I do.
So when it comes to people who want to keep an eye out for when works come out from you, where can they find you, or where can they find this book?
People can find me on Instagram if they want. This is like, I'm very like, I'm a kind of like a humble queen, but I'm trying not to be. I've been told to be less humble. You can find me on Instagram at skylar.dyler. In terms of the book, it's still being published. Like, I only signed the contract yesterday. I would just say, like, check back in with me in like a year or two. But I am kind of publishing other things in the meantime. So, like, I do writings for journals, and I'm also on Instagram. I just make really stupid videos. So I would recommend, that's my work that's immediate that you can see in the meantime, is my dumb little TikToks.
I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your story with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was really lovely.
Speak My Language Disability is an initiative funded by the Commonwealth Department of Social Services. It is led by the Ethnic Communities Council of New South Wales and proudly delivered in partnership with SBS.